Everyone, thank you so much for joining me today. This is Angela Stevens, and I'm with the Refocus podcast with Angela Stevens, where we interview executives on how they focus and how they refocus. I am so excited to interview this guest today, and many of you may know him. He's very well known in the beverage and food and nutrition industries. His name is Jeffrey Kleinman. He is the editor-in-chief with BevNet. He oversees all of the organization's reporting across all of its websites, as well as BevNet Magazine. He also plans and hosts the BevNet Live and Nosh Live conferences. So you may have heard him speak or read many of his articles. So I hope I said that all right, Jeff, but thank you so much for joining. And let me know, did I say that right?
Yeah. I mean, we do a little bit more than just beverage. We also cover food companies, entrepreneurial beer companies, and now we've started to dabble in the cannabis space as well, which is, as we know, great for focus. We're basically, the way I try and explain it to people is that we're Inc. or TechCrunch for emerging CPG brands.
It's interesting that you said that, Jeff, because as you and I know, the CBD industry is exploding right now, and we're finding it along areas of the food, nutrition, supplement space, even somewhat into the beverage space as well. And are you the person that kind of brings it all together, ties it in together, and merges those industries with companies that are working in that area?
Yeah, as an organization, we really try and stay on top of all the major deals, major trends, major retailing initiatives, and the minor trends and initiatives that are going to affect the way that brands are able to grow and scale and, you know, realize their dreams. At the same time, we also discuss a lot of, you know, at the same time, there's a big part of our job, which is just discussing best practices. A lot of times, I think about it as those times in the off season when football coaches kind of trade plays. They go and, you know, and discuss things that they're doing in their playbooks, either with folks from the same league or from, you know, you'll see pro coaches go down to college, and they'll just sort of share pages of the playbook, often knowing that they don't have the same personnel, but thinking situationally. And so a lot of what we do is try and teach brands to think situationally, while at the same time, you know, offering sort of a continuous torrent of news on the issues that affect them.
Interesting, Jeff. And, you know, we had talked about that you do a lot of speaking at different shows like Supply Side West and East. You know, do you put those shows on, or are you a part of those, or do you speak at those? Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about that as well?
So I have to go to a lot of sort of selling shows or industry events as part of my job. And that's a lot of that's in reporting. You know, I will be asked to speak or sit on panels some, but a big part of our operation is actually running a series of conferences, usually for a week or more at a time, where we'll hit each of our verticals. You know, we'll have BevNet Live and Nosh Live and Brewbound Live, and then we also have a cannabis forum, and we kind of run them all together in sequence. So, you know, if you're someone who's, you know, crazy enough to stick around for all of them, you tend to get the nightmare situation where you have me on stage in front of you for like 8 days straight. There are very few people who can handle that, you know. It's one of those things that would kill most folks, having to deal with me hosting. But I just go into this mode where I'm moderating. And so that's sort of my primary job these days is I just can't stop moderating conversations and asking questions of speakers who I've helped bring in, or else, you know, shooting questions up to other members of the staff who are also on stage and who are running their own conversations. So it's really, we call it peer expertise conferences or peer knowledge conferences. And that's where I think a lot of my focus, well, you know, my mental focus has to be in play, is just this idea that I'm, you know, hosting the Tonight Show for several days in a row.
And you meet a lot of people, Jeff, with your job and going to different conferences. And those connections turn into friendships and business connections as well. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny because that is, you know, I'm a longtime journalist, and that's one of the things that I think is very much in common with my dad's old job. You know, he was a sales guy. And it's important to remember details about people that go back so far that they create the skeletons of institutional knowledge. For salespeople, I think it's knowing what a customer needs. And for a journalist, I think it's just remembering where the bodies are buried, what the original story was, and how it's changed. And I've found that, you know, as part of that, people like when you remember things about them most of the time. Most of the time.
Jeff, you had mentioned earlier that, you know, you weren't in sales, but actually you meet a lot of salespeople and you make those connections, and those salespeople, you connect with other people, then they make sales. So you're actually the glue that holds this group together, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Just like with following sports, you've got to know which players are on which teams and sort of what their needs are. And that's partially because you see companies that are challenged because they're understaffed or underfunded in certain areas. And sometimes you can make a connection that'll help them out, you know, much like you do. Or you just, as sort of a sideline coach might say, hey, have you thought about, you know, doubling down more on field marketing because you have such an incredibly potent tasting product? It's the kind of thing that could wake someone up very quickly. You know, that's all done with the caveat that I've never done this stuff. I've never sold anything or built anything or really done anything.
And I know this because my husband, well, a lot of people don't know this, but my husband works in the beverage industry and contract manufacturing, and has known Jeff for many years and has seen him at different shows and puts him up on a high pedestal and is always giving you such a wonderful compliment about what you do, because you're always the person that goes out and makes sure that everybody is being, you know, getting to know different companies, and those companies are getting to know the new individuals that are coming coming to that conference.
Yeah. Well, listen, a compliment from your husband, Angela, is like gold.
Which is Daryl Sauber. I guess we should say his name, right?
What we think of it more as is building a community where people can interact. You know, it's sort of like being a good host at a cocktail party, doing a lot of kind of Yenta type introductions. And then, you know, providing that, I guess, educational material that helps people build conversations that's related to the industry that they're working in.
Tell us more about yourself. And a lot of people don't know this, but I own three businesses. I know I need to get a hobby, but I'm always fascinated about their journey and how they got into that career. What were the steps and the direction and the tools that you did to get you into, you know, the field that you're in and to make you want to be this editor of this wonderful magazine that's grown so much? You know, what was the steps that you took to go into that journey?
Well, so I'm a recovering newspaper reporter. You know, I was a liberal arts major in college and was living in New York and sort of trying to do some writing and couldn't quite find a way to focus myself in a career. I think I just graduated with little idea of what I should be doing. And so, you know, kind of adopted this sort of dream that I was going to go to New York and be a writer. And I found that I couldn't do it on my own. I needed a topic. I needed a way to find something to say. And so I ended up getting a job using my skill as a writer, working for a due diligence investigation firm. So we would basically background teams that were being targeted for acquisition or for significant loans. And it was basically reporting, only I was doing it for sort of really big money interests. And I realized that I liked the reporting, but I didn't necessarily like doing it for these people that had all this authority. I'd always had something of a problem with authority. So I thought, well, I could, in fact, become a reporter and then hassle those people.
Right. There you go.
So, you know, that gave me some direction. I applied to journalism school. I went through that, came out and moved to Massachusetts with my girlfriend, now my wife, because she was starting law school. Now that made us, of course, the people with the least popular professions on the planet. Reporter and lawyer. I liked it, but I didn't love newspaper. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about the idea of focus before we sat down for this. And one of the things that causes incredible focus is stress from deadlines. Right, the ability to put yourself in that kind of writing tube that you need to be in to get something done, because if not, you're going to get fired.
I never thought about it that way. You know, we all have our stresses and things that are going on in our life, but when you're an editor and you're a writer and you have, you know, a paper or a web page or whatever it might be that has a deadline and you have to get there, that's got to put an enormous stress on the person that's writing that article.
Yeah. And you're kind of hunting strands of a story or multiple stories at once. And you've got to find a time to sort of sit and get this thing out as a complete story, you know, a complete item, sometimes multiple times a day. And so, you know, I was thinking about that, and I'm probably still wired to focus on deadline better than in any other way. And it's interesting now because I should have focus throughout the day. And instead, I tend to have this surge of productivity in the late afternoon, which of course drives my wife and family crazy, because that's when I'm very productive, which causes me to be late for dinner a good bit.
It's interesting that you said that, because, you know, this is what this podcast is all about. It's like how people focus and how they refocus. Many times I will hear that, especially from a lot of senior executives, that it seems, you know, when they're working on a project or they're, you know, very focused on it, you know, they might have an argument or a strong discussion, as I always say, with their spouse or children. But, you know, when you've got to go on and you've got to get that information out, you have to get it. You have to do that. And I know that a lot of people that have talked with me in the past about this certain subject of focusing is that they will do better in the late afternoons, because when you've got to get that information out, you've got to get it out.
Yeah. And it's, so part of it is knowing your time of day, I think is very important. I think another part of it is just environmental. So if you are sort of a back against the wall kind of person, all those things that come up during the day become excuses to avoid putting your back to that wall until the wall arrives.
So how do you do that, Jeff? I mean, you know, let's say, you know, if you're having a bad day or just something's gone wrong, how do you pull it together? How do you, Jeff, do that?
So I think breathing is important. You know, just a couple of deep breaths. I'm not a meditation guru or anything, but I do believe that gathering your breath is really important before you undertake anything stressful. Sometimes I'll do a walk around the block, and I think just unplugging everything is important. It's when you're dealing in information and detail, it's very easy to keep tumbling down the rabbit hole of the internet when you pick up a thread of something that might be relevant to a story. And you have to be able to just sort of cut bait and get back to the main task at hand, which is putting one sentence after another. Now, that said, I'm also a huge proponent of working while your energy is strong and walking away and coming back to something to improve it, you know, so I'm a big believer in drafting and honing work and believe that any story is improved the next day. And if you have that luxury and you're able to force yourself to put out work ahead of time, it improves so much in the revision. And that's something that I think is important for kids writing papers in high school and college and reporters working on stuff that they have an extra day on, even to the point of, can you just get up, get away from a piece for a little while, come back to it, and you'll see where the holes are, where the fat might be, and where you need to tinker a little bit to really make it work. Because, you know, you think about focus as a mental exercise. It's also, think of it as a visual exercise. It's, and then move that visualization into narrative. And you have to be able to see your story come together. And sometimes when you're in it, you can't see where the holes are, where the mistakes are. And so walking away and coming back gives you a new look.
You know, we have a lot of clients and guests on the show that mention similar situations. We had actually one guest recently, Robert Powell, who is an ADHD business coach, and he always called it the 10-minute rule, that you would set a timer, work on a certain project, and do it for 10 minutes, then get up, go for a walk, and then come right back and do it. And that seemed to help a lot of his clients. Would you say that that's similar?
Yeah, no, I call it, you just got to barf on the page for a little while and then kind of clean it up after.
You know, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you, Jeff, I was listening to you talk about this subject and I was going down, you know, the road in my mind, and it occurred to me that I know a lot of writers who write for short films, they write for books, they write for feature films, things like that. But sometimes I will get the traditional writer's block. With you in your career and the job that you do now, does that ever happen to you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in fact, a couple of years ago, I was looking at myself in the mirror. You know, I turned 45 and I said, you know, hey, you're halfway to 90. Where's the novel? So I think everyone has blocks that they're wrestling with, either in terms of short-term ability to get something out or long-term ability to get something out. I'm still trying to figure out how to unplug my own long-term productivity. But I know that I'm getting better in the short and the medium term. And part of that is just the experience of having done things before. And it's also learning how to focus, learning how to say, now is work time, or now is actually leisure time. There's a thought that maybe the word shouldn't be focus, but present. And I think it's hard for people who are achievement oriented or type A to sometimes focus on relaxation or focus on conversation, focus on the things that aren't necessarily achievement oriented. But knowing how to shift through the gears of the day or the week or the month is a way of building in, I'd say, productive periods and down periods.
So I'm sure that you get, you know, really consumed with your work, but there was a question I wanted to ask you about that. I know that you work a lot. And so are you also working on anything outside of work, such as a book or a film or, you know, anything like that? Because you are an excellent writer. So I wanted to, you know, ask you that question too.
I've done a lot of freelancing in the past. I'm not doing so much now. Mm-hmm. You know, I do some informal advisory board work for different organizations. Again, I'd like to have that novel. You know, I'd mm-hmm. like to be, it's funny, now I'm in a position as the editor where I don't write as much even for my sites anymore. I keep a column, I'll put something out if it's breaking every once in a while, and it's an important story to me. But my focus has had to shift from being the guy who breaks it to handing it to someone else. And I think that, you know, to go back to your question, no, that's the area of my life where I'm kind of kicking myself all the time is, what is that side hustle that I should be doing?
Well, let me put your fears to rest there. As you know, I own an executive search firm and I counsel a lot of people and I interview a lot of people. And, you know, sometimes what I always say is that if you're really good at your job and you're very focused in your job, sometimes you don't have time to do the other stuff. You don't have time to do that other side project or side work that many of us would like to do because you're really focused and doing your job. And your priority is your current role and the role that you're doing. And that is actually a testament and a compliment to you and your background and what you've been doing for so many years. And you can always do that in retirement, Jeff. When is that? 2 years from now or so? And I'm joking. And on the flip side of that, if you're anything like me, Jeff, you probably work all the time. I know my husband says that, but what do you like to do for fun? Because sometimes, you know, we don't do that and we should be doing that. But as like I said, I work all the time. So when you do have time, what is it that you like to do for fun?
So in addition to being a recovering journalist, I'm a recovering deadhead. So, you know, I still love to go hear a lot of live music. I still love to go for beers with people. Probably too many beers with Daryl.
wait, on whose tab? No, I'm just kidding. But no, really, that is probably one of the best ways to get to know someone when you get them out of their comfort zone or out of their work environment and you get to talk with them one-on-one and really get to know who that person is.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, I'm a parent of a couple of teenagers right now. My daughter's 12 and a half, but might as well be 17 and 7 at the same time. And my son's 15. So they are a big part of the day and the downtime. You know, I do get a lot of exercise. We have an elliptical trainer upstairs in front of a television. So,
Jeff, how long have you been with BevNet now?
This will be 15, actually. I started shortly after my son was born. And, you know, it's funny because if he hadn't been born, I probably wouldn't have been here. But my wife had been working at a big corporate law firm, didn't love that lifestyle. And so she left. At the time, I was a freelance writer. I would suggest to all you kids out there who want to become freelance writers that the key to success as a freelance writer is to marry a corporate lawyer. But when they leave the firm and your healthcare starts to expire, you start to think about full-time work. And that's what I did. I was very fortunate to find a place that was growing and had appreciation for what I might bring and what news might mean for the industry just down the road. I've been incredibly fortunate in that regard.
Right. And there's, you know, I talk with a lot of individuals who are in college or out of college, and they're thinking of going into this field, into the writing or editing field. If you were to sit down with those individuals, what advice would you give to them, especially in the writing and the editing field?
So it's obviously been a tough time for the press in the past few years. And certainly I'm a big believer in the importance of a fair and independent press. But every time I think about where my career has taken me, it's always the writing that's the thread. And I would say that a job in writing, or a job where writing is one of the core competencies, is so vital in a world where we're just overrun by numbers. And being able to turn those numbers and how they affect people into coherent narrative is becoming more and more important. You know, we're at a time where every single company that out there is talking about content and what, you know, what kind of story can they tell to the consumer? What kind of story can they tell to the voter? And I think being able to tell stories, and also on the reporting side, sort of smell the stories that aren't really true, is as important a skill to have as learning some Python or getting an MBA. So I would say learn how to write, because you learn how to express thought in ways that people will understand it. And that's becoming a rare skill these days.
Interesting enough, you know, we were talking about kids, you've got kids, and I've got a son who's in college now. And it's fascinating to me that they now have all of these writing labs in the universities that, you know, you and I are near the same age, and we did not have that opportunity. So that's, to me, that's a gift for them that they have and a resource that they can utilize while they're there. Have you noticed that? I mean, I was really shocked, but pleasantly surprised as well.
Absolutely. You know, learning how to restate things and how to connect thought to paper is a skill that we're all always working at. You know, I read my son and my daughter's work, and my wife is a wonderful writer, but I read their work and I see it moving along, you know, with their grade and with their own facility with language. And it just makes me so happy, because I know that they're growing as thinkers and as as individuals, because they're able to turn thoughts into words, into sentences that express those thoughts.
You know, there's a lot of individuals that go to different organizations and seminars if they're new in the industry, trying to connect. And, you know, let's take, for instance, like, you know, BevNet, you know, Expo West, Expo East, something like that. And put yourself in those individuals' shoes and ask yourself, you know, if you're walking into this, you know, big event, and let's say you are by yourself, you're not with a team of people, you know, what advice would you do about connecting with people? How, you know, because it can be very intimidating if you've ever been there. I know I've been to the Arnold and I thought I was in shape until I went there, but no, seriously, if you were walking into an event alone, what would your advice be to those individuals trying to connect with others?
Well, I mean, I think we do a lot of it, honestly, not to toot our own commercial horn here, but our job is to help, is to put people in a place where they can connect over conversation. A lot of the supply side and the expos, they're wonderful events, but they're geared towards selling. And one of the things that I've always been excited about is the opportunity to just meet these people, you know, and to figure out where there's a flash of conversation and familiarity that might go beyond just the transactional. Now, part of that is because I'm not really selling products trying to hit a quota or open new lines of business. I'm just trying to find a good story. But I think being able to tell stories with other people is the heart of connection.
Right.
So, you know, I would say for folks who are going to these events, you know, don't be a shrinking violet. Be ready to put yourself out there and, you know, put yourself in a selling mode, but also. And it's really hard with so many people coming at you, and if you're in your booth, it's also important to listen, because there's so much good advice that gets traded between people at these things. You can really treat them as a way to gather incredible amounts of advice from an industry that, while competitive, is still, I think, unified in its rebellion against bigger food companies, bigger ideas that have kind of governed their space for so long.
I think that's a really good idea, because even, you know, as my husband has a lot of experience in the areas of retort and aseptic in the beverage industry, many times people will come to his booth or want to talk with him about doing a certain product. And, you know, he may not have the capacity, or it may not be his area of expertise that they're wanting to work in. And I always hear about how he will, you know, connect them with others or try to find the right partners for those individuals that might be attending that event.
Absolutely. And Daryl's is a great example of someone who's helped get a lot of smaller brands off the ground and helped some of the biggest companies in the world, you know, achieve the product types that they want to put on the market.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just recognizing that, you know, when someone's a resource is really important. I think the other thing is, you got to respect the youth, and you got to respect folks who are doing things differently, because they're so good with these new sets of tools that are out there in terms of, you know, being able to build direct to consumer brands really quickly, to engage with people visually and use the social channels rather than the traditional media channels as ways of building audiences. But they may not be as good in that sort of real world environment. And that's where the act of listening to other people's stories is incredibly important.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of their journeys, yeah. Jeff, we get a lot of questions that will be emailed to us that our listeners want us to ask some of our guests. And one of the topics that always comes up is failure. You know, we've all gone through that or disappointment in some time in our life. And, you know, I look at your background and it's so impressive. For any of you that don't know about Jeff's background, it's very, very impressive, Jeff. So you did a great job. But he is a graduate of Yale University and Columbia University's Graduate School of Journalism. And he's, you know, frequently a cited expert on the beverage industry in many different articles, you know, magazines and seminars. And he's, you know, he's actually been named twice in Forbes as one of the most, as one of the 25 most influential individuals when it comes to consumer and retail companies. So that's very impressive. But I do want to ask you, you know, have you experienced any failure or setbacks in your career that you could share with us and maybe inspire some of our listeners?
I think you face rejection constantly as a reporter. Now, that's not necessarily failure, but it's a door closed. People won't comment. An idea that you have for a story is, in fact, goes the other way. You just can't fill up the story with enough information to make it work, even though you know it's true. That's hard. You know, I think that in terms of what we set out for ourselves, you know, I sometimes then look at what I was doing as a newspaper reporter, and I think I was pretty good, but I wasn't as good as some of the best folks in the newsroom. And for someone who's coming from that kind of background, although, you know, I tended to think that they let me into Yale as a good, bad example. You think about the intensity with which many of these people develop their careers. If you measure yourself against other people, and I was certainly wired too early on, I would have called myself a failure for years. And yet, I know I'm doing okay.
Well, everyone I know in the industry they have a very high regard for you. I hear your name over and over. And Jeff, as I mentioned earlier, you've been named twice in Forbes as one of the 25 most influential individuals when it comes to consumer and retail companies, which is very impressive.
Yeah, yeah. It's around the house, I'm very well regarded.
You're just dad.
One my kids really like is I'm one of the world's leading authorities on the coconut water business. And you can't beat that.
Speaking of that, Jeff, you know, that's a very hot industry as well. However, you know what, and I know you can't say, you know, who some of the new hot areas are, but can you share with us, you know, there's the CBD market, you know, there's the coconut water. What's the new and innovative? I mean, what's the hot market area that everybody's talking about?
Well, there are a few things. I mean, you hear so much about plant-based now and the idea that, you know, we're moving from animal-based proteins to ones that are derived from plants. And I think there's a higher level of environmental consciousness about the way products are made and what they're packaged in right now. There's certainly a big focus on things like kombucha as a lower sugar alternative to soda. But at the same time, there's also plenty of drinks that just taste delicious, and sugar helps with that. On the whole, people are looking at products that do things for them, or that they perceive as doing things for them, rather than just for pure refreshment. You know, that can lead to some tough flavor decisions. But it also has created a lot of coffee consumption. And as someone who now understands, if I drunk coffee in college, straight A's, I can't argue with that as both a focus product and an enabler of excellence.
Right, exactly. And with the millennial crowd, it's definitely a different focus than what we had.
Yeah.
It's exciting to have a lot of different choices that we didn't have. So Jeff, if anyone wants to know more about you or how to reach you or just learn more about you, we'll put some show notes on our website, but you know, where can they reach you to find out that information?
Yeah. I mean, I'm on bevnet.com and our sites are bevnet.com, nosh.com, brewbound, brewbound.com. An incredible team of editors and reporters that I work with. They put out great stories just about every day. We put out a magazine, BevNet magazine, and we're doing a lot of podcasting ourselves through something called Taste Radio. And that's...
I saw that. That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's been an incredible sort of force accelerator for the kinds of businesses that we're in, and they tell those stories on a weekly basis and dig in like you do.
Well, listen, Jeff, I know that you and I could talk for hours and hours, but before I go, I wanted to ask you a question that we ask all of our listeners or all of our guests is, you know, we all have to be on again, like we have our off days and we're not so focused, but you know, when you're getting ready to go to that meeting or go to present or go on stage and you get in your car and you want to turn on something that's really going to, you know, get you focused, get you going. What is it that you, Jeff, what is it that you listen to?
Well, I listen to a lot of jazz and I listen to a lot of Bob Dylan. And I remember when I would be working on a sort of investigative piece, there was a song called Seven Curses by Bob Dylan. And it was just about injustice. And at the time, I thought I was rectifying injustice through my pen.
The gallows shadows shook the evening. In the night, hound dog bayed. In the night, the grounds was groaning. In the night, the price was paid. The next morning, she had awoken to find that the judge had never spoken. She saw that hanging branch abandoned. She saw her father's body broken.
I love that. Well, I tell you, my playlist is really getting great. The last time I think we had this conversation with one of our guests, his choice was AC/DC. So I'm really having a blast with this.
You can't beat It's a Long Way to the Top if you want to rock and roll or anything on Live Wire. So...
And again, Jeff, thank you so much for doing this. You know, I think a lot of people are having more and more difficulty focusing, and that's why we created this podcast. It's the reason we created our company, Refocus the Creative Office, to help people learn more how to focus. So I graciously appreciate you being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Angela. It's always so great to talk to you and to talk to your husband. And I hope I'm helpful. All I can say is, it's hard to multitask. And if you got to focus, turn it off.
I love it. Jeff, again, I can't thank you enough. I just know many people are going to be inspired by many of the things that you shared with us today. So thank you again.
Thank you.
What a great and insightful interview with Jeff Kleinman. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I know I did. It's very interesting to hear the opinions and the directions and the thoughts of people who write for a living and who work in editing, who work in publications with deadlines. So again, I hope you picked up something in this interview that helps you focus or helps you refocus today. I can't wait to let you know about our next guest. You're going to love that person as well. So have a great week. And thank you again for supporting, subscribing, and sharing the word about our podcast, Refocus with Angela Stevens. This week's podcast was sponsored by Refocus, the Creative Office. You can find out more about the company at Time to Refocus. That's T-I-M-E. 2refocus.com. What you're going to find on there is they have a unique product line. All of the products are created through the eyes of a child with ADHD. They have 9 different versions of password books, including mini versions and a left-handed version. They have calendars, academic calendars now, and they've even redesigned the pill box. So check them out, Time to Refocus. And I hope that whether it's this interview or our other guests or our website, that it gives you something that helps you refocus to have a better life. Thanks again.